This is the KWBU Fine-Tuned Music Series. I'm Kately Mills. Today I'm talking with local Southern rock musician Melinda Adams, who also works in Waco's Convention and Visitors Bureau. We talk about how music plays into the economics of the city and what could be on the horizon for the music scene. But first, here's her song, Muddy Waters. Welcome, Melinda, to the KWBU studios. We're glad to have you here.
Hello.
So I want to get started with getting to know you. Can you tell me where you grew up?
Yes. So I grew up down in Cypress, Texas, which is like northwest Houston. People think Houston. It's like 45 minutes from downtown Houston.
Growing up there, do you have like siblings, or when did you first start getting interested in music?
I do. I've got a brother and sister. They're both younger. My brother was on drumline, and he's my stepbrother, but we might as well be related. So we're like 3 months apart. So we both were in marching band all throughout high school and everything together. So I was in the flute section, and he was on drumline. And drumline was like the cool kids. Mm-hmm. So, but we all hung out together and did the band nerd thing.
Yeah.
So that was, I guess, when I first started getting into it. And then when I was getting ready for college, I was like, you know, I really want to be a music major. And of course, my dad's a chemical engineer, and he was like, I don't think that's a good idea. He's like, you're going to close a lot of doors if you do that. You should major in like business or something, mm-hmm. you know, that pays well.
So in middle school is when you started playing flute.
Yeah.
Is when you first started getting interested in music. So was it that you were more so interested in the classical music side?
Not so much. I mean, obviously, that's the direction I went because it was like most accessible at the time. Mm-hmm. And I went that direction. Like, I can read music and I can obviously play a few different instruments. And it really wasn't until after college that I started exploring the commercial route. And that started through church. And, like, I was singing in church and doing some stuff with that. And then it kind of just progressed from there. I met some other musicians and started playing bass and then singing more.
What are the instruments you play?
So flute is my primary instrument, mm-hmm. But then I picked up bass guitar, I play some piano, and then I picked up regular guitar about a year and a half ago.
Do you think because you have a background in ensemble, being in band, that encouraged you to start a band? Because you had experience with ensembles?
Somewhat. I actually, I started dating a guy who was a drummer, mm-hmm. and who I'm still with right now, but hello, Curtis. and they actually were playing in a band called the Sol Ross Band at the time, and they needed a bass player. They were having trouble keeping a bass player. And I was like, well, you know, hey, I have a music background. I'll just pick up bass. How hard can it be? Mm-hmm. Sorry to all my bass player friends. I know you're cringing right now. But I bought a small rig and started playing some country bass, mm-hmm. and did that for a couple of years with them and sang harmony. And then the singer in that band decided to stop playing for a bit. So me and Curtis and the guitar player, James, formed another project. And that's when I started singing more because we were like, well, we're not ready to quit playing.
Growing up, was your favorite music country music?
No, actually. I had a range of all different kind of things.
Really?
You know how your parents influence a little bit what you're listening to when you're
Absolutely.
Younger? So my mom was like Motown all the way. So like, you know, she would listen to Lionel Richie and the Commodores, mm-hmm. and all kinds of stuff, anything that grooves. And then my dad listened to like the older stuff, like the Eagles and...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and stuff like that, yeah. So it was kind of a good mix between the two.
How do you think that impacted your choice to go into Southern country rock?
I definitely think I like stuff that grooves. So anything that, you know, you hear it and you start tapping your foot immediately, that's the kind of stuff I like. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think there's a time and place for the slow sad songs. You know, everybody needs those too. But I think stuff that's fun to listen to when you're out drinking with friends, and that's the kind of stuff I really like.
So you attended Baylor, where you got your bachelor's in music education. How do you think being at Baylor changed what you wanted to do with music?
That is a great question. So I majored in music education, which most people go like the band director or choir director route from that.
Yeah.
And I decided my junior year that that was not going to be the direction I was going to go. I had some music scholarships, and so it was kind of at that point too late to turn back. Mm-hmm. And I was teaching lessons in the evenings. I taught piano lessons, and I taught voice lessons and then some woodwind lessons at a place in Robinson, a small music school. So I was doing that in the evenings, and I love teaching. I love kids. It was just not the direction I wanted to go in the long term. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I actually had gotten a temporary job with the city of Waco, just working in the housing and economic development area.
Yeah.
And I was working there, and that's when I started playing on the commercial side more. And I was like, oh, man, this is the direction I'm supposed to go with music. Like, this is my niche.
So now are you a full-time musician?
I'm not. So I work full-time and play music at least twice a week, as well as rehearsals and all that good stuff and writing. And I do both, so I juggle, and it is very difficult sometimes. But that's just the best model for me right now, I guess.
When you first started branching out and doing more gigs around, what was the response like? Was it easy for you to book shows, or did it kind of take a while?
It took a while at first. So when you start booking shows, you are no longer a musician. You're now a salesperson.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When you're cold calling venues, like, you're selling yourself, because this person's never heard you from Adam. They don't know who you are, if you're good, or, you know, what kind of crowd you draw.
What would they ask you? Like, how would you sell yourself?
So normally if I'm cold calling somebody, I do my homework beforehand. So I'm looking at female artists who play similar stuff to what I play, and I look at where they're playing, and then I know that that's going to be a market that I can cater to.
Huh.
So, you know, if I'm going to go play in Dallas or Fort Worth or Austin or wherever, then I'm going to see where other similar female artists are playing, because that's a good start. Mm-hmm. So then I literally will cold call venues or hit up, you know, email, messenger, et cetera, and tell them, you know, hey, I saw that so-and-so plays here. We have a similar sound. You know, here's our entry-level rate. You know, I would love to come play, et cetera. And then we negotiate from there, you know, whether we're allowed to bring merch or whether you know, it's a 3-hour set, or sometimes they want 4 hours, and how many breaks we can take, et cetera, and kind of go from there.
Roughly how long do you think it took when you first started to kind of build a reputation for yourself and your band to, like, have these venues reach out to you to see if you were available or something like that?
I would say from the time that we started, maybe a little over a year, mm-hmm. maybe closer to 2 years probably. We're like, well, now we'll play somewhere, and then, you know, they'll ask us back, or I'll have people hit me up and say, hey, are you available XYZ dates? You know, initially that was, you know, you got to do your footwork first. But yeah, probably a year and a half or so.
Do you think that is common among musicians here, regardless of genre? Or do you think that's specific to, like, country, rock musicians here?
I think it is. I think the people who do the work outside of the creative stuff is who succeed. I think if you put in the footwork to start, you know, building those relationships and making sure that you're professional with the venue owners or whoever's booking you, et cetera, that's how you get asked back. That's how you get, you know, good reviews by word of mouth, you know, somebody recommending you to somebody else.
Regardless of genre.
Regardless of genre, yeah.
That's interesting. I actually did a roundtable before I started doing artist interviews. And Dick Gimble, who works at MCC, he's the son of Johnny Gimble. He said that a lot of his students, you know, they'll be in a different genre. But then if they ever want to play a gig here, they'll have to go into country or rock, which is kind of interesting, because if you're wanting to play, like, I don't know, jazz, and then you are not necessarily forced, but you practice to play country in order to make money.
Do you think that there could be more done for musicians that aren't in a rock or country genre to get more recognition here?
I think potentially. I think he's very right in that, and that's partially because that's the way the market is right now.
Yeah.
Like, the market here is driven by country artists, and there's a couple of venue owners who used to own, you know, rock venues, and it just, they couldn't draw a crowd. And they will tell you, now they book Texas country artists because those fans are loyal.
Yeah.
They will come out whether it's rain or shine or, you know, whatever day of the week, and that's what makes the money. So obviously, venues are going to book what's bringing in
what
money.
What sells.
Yeah. Which is good and bad. Like, it's good because obviously the people who play country are getting booked.
Yeah.
So I'm not complaining. But the people who don't play that are not always, you know, priority. Like, regardless of, you could be a fantastic, you know, rock artist or rap artist or whatever else. There's just not a lot of venues that support that here because the crowd base isn't there.
Do you think as the city's been growing over, I think, the past, like, year or so, that's something that we're seeing more, like, genres like hip-hop, like punk rock, getting played more often?
Some. I do think, like, I know, you know, Katie Eliza with Keep Waco Loud, like, she has done a fantastic job at highlighting some of those.
Yeah.
And, like, bringing, you know, giving them some spotlight and kind of showing people, like, hey, we do have more here than just country.
Yeah.
Which is great. Like, I know, you know, I went to the showcase that she was hosting in
with the Texas Music Office?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I heard a couple bands there I'd never heard before. And one of, like, Delmas Morrison, I thought they were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's definitely doing stuff like that to kind of give those people a platform and some spotlight.
So one goal of our series is to capture the musician experience in Waco, especially since it's growing. And now I know that you've played all over the country and all over the world. So what is unique about playing in Waco?
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you, and I mean, I think, I don't know if this is just unique to Waco. I'm sure this is kind of anywhere. Like, once you establish relationships with people who are coming to your shows, like, they will be loyal. They will come see you play every now and then. Like, I could name off at least 10 people who come to almost all my shows,
mm-hmm.
and which is awesome. And I think that's part of it, is, like, we are a tight-knit community, and so you do build those – it's easier to build those relationships with people and, like, you know people on a first-name basis and, like, you know, hey, how's your mom and them, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing that we benefit from here, is it's really tight-knit.
Have you made Central Texas your home base whenever you're not on the road?
Yes. So I'm based out of Waco. I live in, like, the Bosqueville area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Originally from Houston, but here now. And so that's actually a plus, because we're, you know, an hour and a half from Dallas, an hour and a half from Austin, an hour and a half from College Station.
Yeah.
Like, we are right in the middle, so it makes it kind of a lot easier to travel.
I do want to also add that one of the music groups I have interviewed, they pointed out, like, something that is unique to them about Waco, regardless of genres, is that they help one another out. So, like, you know, a hip-hop artist could be helping a punk rock artist get heard more, or, like, get them gigs. Have you seen that kind of cross-genre hospitality elsewhere? Or have you experienced that as well?
I have not. I know probably with my, I mean, country is kind of like its own niche. So country, if we have any crossover, it's usually with the rock thing.
Uh-huh.
Or if you're in Nashville with rap, I guess. but, yeah, it's kind of... That's more where I would see some crossover, where, you know, I've seen, like, you know, a Texas country band open for an Eagles
mm-hmm.
cover band or something like that.
What are usually, like, the type of bands that open up for you guys?
We haven't really done where they've opened for us. It's kind of been joint show stuff.
Oh, okay.
But we've done, well, you want local artists or?
Yeah, yeah. So, just here locally.
Yeah, local artists that we've done joint shows with. Gosh, there's a lot. We've done joint shows with, you know, Tony Adams Band. We've done with the Hoosier Brothers, with Brett Hendricks Band, with I mean, pretty much every Texas country artist that's kind of in this area, we've probably shared the stage with at some point. And they're all fantastic. Like, everybody's great, and it's a really great community.
Yeah. So in addition to your solo music, you've also been in several groups, and you've mentioned them, the Sol Ross Band and Station Creek. What have you learned from being in a group that you've been able to apply in your solo projects?
Attitude is everything. And I know anybody who's in a band will say this. It's like being in a family. Mm-hmm. You know, it is literally family dynamics. Like, you will fight, you will argue, you will love each other, hate each other. You go through, like, all the roller coaster effect. So I think with that, like, I know anybody that we play with, attitude is everything. I'll hire somebody that has a better attitude that doesn't play as well over somebody who plays amazing and has a crappy attitude.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say that's one thing that I've learned from that is, like, if I know I don't want to work with people with a bad attitude. So anytime I'm going out selling myself and working with others as a solo artist, I try to have a really good attitude.
So whenever you play your solo music, are you still with your band technically, or is it more like you and just a guitar?
Both.
Oh, okay.
Both. Yeah. So it depends on the venue and the pay. I try not to bring the guys in and have it be a full band thing unless it's worth their time and money.
Mm.
So obviously with full bands, you have to charge a lot more and bring in a much larger system. So it's a lot more time and effort, et cetera. And so I'm not going to ask them to, you know, leave families and take time out of their day to come play unless it's worth their time.
I do want to go back to whenever you said that you are juggling, like, work life, but also this is work for you too. Let's not
totally
discount that. You know, it's a creative work process. How do you balance that? Do you actually, like, say, hey, today I'm going to spend 3 hours, 4 hours doing something? Like, do you dedicate specific time to yourself so you have that creative process time?
Oh, gosh. I wish I was that organized.
Oh.
I should do that.
How do you prepare for shows and, like, work on your stuff?
Literally, whenever I can. Like, tonight I have at 7 p.m. I have a full band rehearsal. Like, we're getting together and going over stuff because we're playing in the near future and just to tighten things up. So that's going to knock out my entire day. You know, I work until 5 and then I get off and go do that.
Yeah.
It kind of just depends on when I can find the time. I tried, you know, when I was trying to do, like, what we call, like, just brain throw up, right? Where you just get up and, like, set an egg timer for 5 minutes and just write down whatever comes to your head.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's just to kind of get the creative juices flowing. But you just, like, whatever you could think about, or you can pick, like, a theme, like, you know, there's a coffee cup sitting on this table in here. So I would set the coffee cup down and be like, okay, you know, anything that I could write about this coffee cup and, like, the most descriptive creative words you can think of, you know, just to kind of get the juices flowing. And so I was trying to do that in the mornings, but sleep definitely took over that.
Yeah, because you're working a full-time job.
Yeah, where I was like, I could get up 30 minutes early and do that, you know, with my coffee, et cetera. But, or I can get 30 extra minutes of sleep.
Which one do I do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I want to talk about the song that we heard at the beginning of our segment here, Muddy Waters. Can you describe to me what that song's about and the writing process and the creative process behind that?
Totally. So Muddy Waters is about when I was at a point in my life where I was making a lot of compromises. And it was taking me down a path I really did not want to be on.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was compromising a lot of, like, myself and who I wanted to be. And so I don't know where the turning point was, but it was there was just a point where I hit and I said, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to make these compromises anymore. I want to do it my way and be on the path that I truly want to be on. So that's kind of where Muddy Waters came from. And it's, you know, it's about making that compromise in the past, but knowing that you can, you know, walk down to the river, step in there and let it wash everything away and start over.
Mm-hmm.
So it's never too late to change direction or change course and start fresh.
Yeah. Do you think that, like, with your music, that a lot of themes that you do explore is a lot of, like, what's happening in your life at that exact moment?
Oh, totally.
Okay.
I mean, not always, but definitely, I would say most musicians are very emotionally driven people.
Yeah.
So, like, whatever is at the height of the emotion or whatever is at the forefront of your mind tends to be what you write about most.
Mm-hmm. I know sometimes people write about, like, friends and family.
Yeah.
Like, experiences that maybe, like, grandparents are having or, you know, friends are having or something. So I didn't know if it's a lot of your music is you use a lot of, like, what's happening personally versus telling stories about people you know. I know that you have written stories like or songs like that, but would you say that most of your music is about, like, hey, I'm overcoming this and this is how I see that?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that definitely. Yeah. I think I can't speak for anybody else, but I know that I even have, like, those songs that are, like, my, you know, really deep kind of dark songs that I don't even know if I want people to ever hear because they're so, like, wow, this girl has issues. Like, I mean, maybe. Who knows? But
hey, yeah. You never know. Somebody might be having the same issues and could feel like, oh, I'm not the only one through that, yeah, through that type of music.
For sure.
I actually, whenever I was researching you, I really liked your influences. So could you name some of those influences that you mentioned on your bio page?
Yeah. So like Wynonna Judd's like one of my go-tos, but I also like Linda Ronstadt or Melissa Etheridge. Mm-hmm. Kind of like that Gretchen Wilson raspy voice sort of thing is, I guess that's my thing.
What draws you to that type of sound?
I don't know. I guess most of those females are really strong, powerful females. They have powerhouse vocals.
Yeah.
And a band that grooves to back it. So I think that's one thing that definitely catches my ear and that I really enjoy listening to.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause I know that you do some, I've watched something on your YouTube where you've performed some of that music. So I was wondering, because yeah, your voice is like that. It's very tough and like also kind of has that pretty side to it as well.
Thanks.
Melissa Etheridge, your voice really reminds me of hers. So I was wondering if growing up or like when you're developing your sound, if you listen to a lot of that music and said, hey, this is what I really relate to the most. And that's why I'm going to try to put some of that influence in my music. Do you think that was the case with you? Were you listening to a lot of Patsy Cline, Linda Ronstadt?
Yeah.
When you were developing your sound?
I definitely listened to them more throughout high school.
Oh, okay.
High school was probably more where I was, you know, when you start to figure out who you are as a person,
yeah,
you know. But yeah, definitely.
Okay, cool. So in July, you actually did a 2.5-week tour in France.
I did.
What was that like?
Oh my gosh, so much fun. Oh, it was amazing. I went with two musicians other than myself. I went with a guitar player named Brad, who is based out of New York.
Oh, cool.
Or New Jersey, technically. And then a fiddle player named Kristen, who's based out of Washington, D.C.
How did you meet them?
So, crazy story. I was rehearsing with my friend Rob at his house down in Gerald, Texas, for a show that we were going to do. And his wife's best friend was there at the house and listening, and she works for American Airlines. She happens to be really good friends with the guitar player Brad and knew that they were planning this tour and needed a singer to come in.
Oh, very cool.
So she's like, hey, I heard this chick singing at Rob's house. Like, y'all should hit her up. And
right place, right time.
Yeah, totally. And so he hit me up and started telling me more about it. And then I was like, well, I really don't have the money to be just like hopping on a plane to France.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, well, you can use her buddy pass for American Airlines, which is just like you fly standby.
Oh,
and so
right,
you pay taxes and fly standby, which it worked out fantastically on the way there. On the way back, it was a little harder to get back because it was very, very busy. So I ended up getting stuck there for like 3 extra days on the way back.
Oh, wow.
Which the first day I was like, I'm stuck in Paris another day. Not going to complain.
What was it? What was performing there like? Because were you doing any music in French? I don't know.
No. So we played all country music.
Oh, cool.
And some classic rock. And we rented this car and then we toured, literally like backpacked through France. Kind of. We started in Paris, went to Neuilly-Plaisance, we went to Dole, Cherbourg, Vesoul, Angers, like all over France. And
how long were you there?
It was about 2.5 weeks.
2.5 weeks.
Yeah. So, the fiddle player is fluent in French.
Luckily,
yes. So I would literally like say, you know, hi, we're so and so, blah, blah, blah. I'd give like the whole spiel and then I'd hand her the mic and she would translate to French. And it's kind of funny because there was one place that we played in Neuilly-Plaisance and we got off the stage and this one, like some of them spoke English. So someone would come up and talk to me in English. And so this one lady came up, she says, you know, what you're saying, I don't think that's what she's saying. Like, I was like, she could be telling y'all I like to sing in the shower or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Like I'm trusting her to translate.
Yeah. I was like, if you know, she introduces us, she says her own thing, it's all good.
I'm curious to know what like the French audience was like to country music and
they,
rock music.
Okay, so truthfully, like full disclosure, they loved it.
Really?
Like it was, yeah, it was like listening rooms almost. They really appreciate music.
Mm-hmm.
So anywhere we played, like they were enthralled. They stayed the entire time. Like we didn't have crowds come in and out.
Oh,
like
yeah.
They literally sat and stayed with us the entire time. Like afterwards, I would go up and meet everybody and like fumble through my horrible French and try to talk to people. You know, I even met my Spanish is much better than my French, and so I did meet like this one group of people, and they were fluent in Spanish.
Oh,
so here I'm in French talking to these people in Spanish. It was pretty cool, though.
Very neat.
Yeah.
So whenever you got back from that, what do you think you're going to use from that experience moving forward here, maybe in this year or maybe next year?
I started writing some stuff based on some things that happened at that trip and whatnot. So that's definitely one thing I'll be using from there.
Very cool.
But I think I got, you know, just doing that, I kind of got bit by the travel bug. And like now I'm like, I want to do more. And so I'm actually flying into D.C. and playing some shows in D.C. with the fiddle player and stuff.
Oh, wow. So from that, now you're going to do some more traveling.
Yeah. So that's kind of, we formed this. We call it the Road Trip Band. And so we started playing more and more. And so now we'll be in D.C. and then hopefully up in Brad's area, New York, hitting some places up there and kind of just traveling around. Brad and I talked about doing like a holiday tour throughout Georgia and like the southeast U.S.
So very cool.
I may do that.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So let's take a minute and listen to your next song, It's Our Time.
I still remember the soft brown eyes and a smile that felt like home. Sure doesn't seem like 30 some years ago. We'll pick back up where we left off. No looking back at the time we lost. That's in the past, 'cause I can't wait another minute to hold you in my arms. Together we're strong enough to weather any storm. 'Cause it's our time.
So with the song that we just heard, can you tell me the background of that song as well?
Yes. This is a really cool story. So I had met this police officer at an event that I was playing at, and he contacted me and said, you know, hey, I've just recently been reunited with my soulmate. You know, I really would like to commission a song for her, basically. And so he was like, could you write us a song, you know? I said, well, give me some more information about your story, like, you know, how did you guys meet? You know, what's the details here?
Yeah.
And so he basically told me that they met up in Kentucky a long time ago, like over 30 years ago at the horse races. And at that time, they really hit it off and they had that chemistry and knew that they had that chemistry and that there was something there. But she was actually seeing somebody else at the time. So he kind of bowed out because he was friends with the other guy. So he bowed out at the time and moved down to Texas, became a police officer. Well, at that time, she married somebody else, and he married somebody else. She also went through cancer, battled it, beat it, and a few years now, he was divorced, and she found him on Facebook and decided to reach back out on a whim. And, of course, they hit it off, and, like, that chemistry was still there, so he just, you know, they started talking more and more, and then he decided to help her move down to Texas. So she moved down to Texas, and I was actually playing a show at Waco Winery, and he had told me about this whole story in the song, and I finished the song, and then I was playing at Waco Winery, and I played it for them acoustic, and then, you know, she's crying, and he's crying, and I'm crying.
Like, everyone's crying.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I'm like, y'all, stop crying. You're making me cry. So it was really neat, and then fast forward a little bit, and he asked me to play it again because he wanted to give her a ring.
Aww.
So we were playing a police officer event, ironically. So he was there in uniform, you know, and asked us to play at full band. And so I played at full band, and then he got down on one knee and gave her a ring. And he even had, like, T-shirts made with the words, It's Our Time, on them. I was like, that's pretty cool. So
I'm a brand.
Right? That's pretty neat.
So I think it's interesting that they reached out and commissioned you. Do you get a lot of commission work that way?
I have had sometimes, like, some people will reach out and ask, you know, can you write something for this? You can write. And most of the time, you know, I'm like, it's not really my thing. You know, like, if jingles aren't really my thing, you know, feelings, so that's more my thing.
If it has feeling, I'm in.
Yeah. So, and it was really, like, I'm a huge horse person, too. Like, I used to show in high school and stuff. And so I'm big into that, too. And I still ride whenever I can. And so when he told me they met at the horse track, you know, they're both trackies, as he called it, which just means, like, they worked at the horse races. Mm-hmm. So they're both huge into horses, too, both animal people. And, like, you know, they have a German Shepherd, and I have a German Shepherd, too. And I'm like, you know what? Okay, I can take enough signs. Like, this is where I'm supposed to do this for you guys. Like,
I relate so much.
Yeah.
So I do want to go back to kind of the music scene. And I do want to ask you, if you were to reach out and talk to people who are building this growing scene here, would you suggest anything? Do you have something in mind that you think Waco needs to have as it continues to grow that it doesn't?
I think the biggest thing right now, live music venues, when it's a legitimate live music venue, they have sound provided.
Oh, okay.
I think, and like in Austin, if you go play in Austin, there's going to be sound everywhere provided. You don't ever have to bring your own sound, except for maybe like the outskirts of Austin. But that would be my biggest thing, is that venues here who are booking musicians would have a house sound system. I mean, they don't necessarily need to have a sound tech on staff to run it, although for liability reasons, that's probably recommended. But yeah, I would say house sound would be step one, you know, and then.
So are you saying like several of them don't have that, or just?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Anywhere you play in Waco, there's maybe like three venues that have sound provided.
Oh, okay.
Anywhere else you're going to bring your own sound. So mm-hmm. even when you're booking full bands, like full bands are having to lug a full PA, which is not totally uncommon. I mean, there's always going to be a place or two where you have to bring your own sound, but it's much, much easier. And actually, to all the venue owners listening, musicians will probably play for less if you have sound provided.
Yeah.
So you do get your investment back in the long run.
Okay. Very interesting. That's insightful. Thank you. I do want to talk about what you're working on in the future. You've mentioned that you're going to be going to D.C., you are writing music. So what can people keep a lookout for if they're wanting to listen to your music for the first time?
Yeah, so I had been working on I have another song coming out called No More Fear, which I haven't decided if I want to release it on an EP or as a single yet, but we'll figure all that out. We're working on getting it recorded. We did hit some hiccups, but we're working through all that now. But it's basically a song about kind of just, you know, don't care what people think anymore. Just do you. Don't, you know, there's no reason to have any fear moving forward. And I wrote that right after I went skydiving for the second time, because I'm crazy.
Oh my gosh, you brave soul. I would never.
So but yeah, so it's No More Fears, fitting for title for it.
Yeah. So I do want to ask, for people who are looking your music up for the first time, and where would you recommend that they start?
The website is always my go-to. I'm melindaadamsmusic.com. And you can click music or videos, et cetera, and kind of go from there. It's just because the stuff that – everything's not totally recorded yet or under the same band name. So it's easier just to look it up on the website.
Whenever you do you record here in Central Texas, or do you record maybe somewhere else in Texas?
So, yeah. So I actually – with Muddy Waters, we recorded that with Chad Malden at Malden Productions, which is out in East Texas.
Oh, okay.
And he's fantastic. I would highly recommend him to anybody needing to record or wanting to get some stuff recorded out there. But he is totally – did all the studio work and production work and mixing, mastering, all that. He's great.
And that's what – that you usually go to him for your recording?
I did for most recently. But prior to that, we worked with Madison Avenue Studios that was out of McGregor, and they're no longer there. Mm-hmm. So that was who we worked with previously.
Yeah, because in my roundtable discussion, I think that was one of the things, is there's not like a lot of recording studios in Central Texas. And so I don't know, as a musician in Central Texas, if that is something that also you think that needs to be more there. But I don't necessarily know how hard it is to start that. So
I don't know, but I would say we do have some decent ones here in town,
but not like a lot. I think is how they've described it to me in the roundtable I did. Like we have some, but just not like.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you go to Austin, you'll throw a rock and hit one.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I would definitely say we don't have anywhere near what Austin has, but there's a handful in town.
Do you think that's almost exciting though, because it is growing?
Oh yeah. No, I think we are definitely growing and changing, and I think. The more open-minded that people can be to that and embracing the change and not, you know, trying to be stubborn about it, I think that that will help the scene grow. I think if everybody works together, that will help the scene grow.
Yeah. I wanted to start asking my artists that I'm interviewing for this, like, what they think Waco's sound is compared to other cities. How would you describe it?
That's a good question.
Because, you know, you have friends in the music scene here, I'm sure, in different genres and everything. But if you
what
were...
Waco's sound
what is. What Waco's sound is, yeah. What makes it unique?
That's really hard to do because we're... I mean, as far as, like, the people coming here for tourism, that is one type of people. And then you have, like, the locals, which is a totally different type of people. it's hard to just put it into one.
Multi-voiced?
Kind of, yeah. It would be really hard for me to put one label on it just because we are pretty diverse when it comes to that.
Do you think the music sphere, because it kind of sounds like you're talking about like two different worlds, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, yes, there is a lot more tourism here because the city is growing. And now with like the Texas Music Office planning to come in and make this a music-friendly city, that world's going to start kind of like meshing together because now there's probably going to be more places for you guys to play. Does that excite you? Does it make you nervous that those two worlds are finally going to like?
No. So that's part of what I do in my day jobs. I work in the tourism sector with this Commission of Visitors Bureau.
Oh, okay.
So that's what I live and breathe it. So no, I'm not scared. No, but I think it's going to be a good thing. I think right now, you know, a lot of local musicians will like market to their friends and family, like people who live here.
Yeah,
I think in the future with downtown growing the way it is, that does open up our market to, hey, there's tourists coming in. Like, you know, people are here from Georgia, from California, from New York. Those are other people that you can market to and like, you know, play your music for who are outside of our small community. So I think it's an opportunity.
Yeah. So since you are in that sector, you are the perfect person for me to ask because I'm also kind of doing a goal for this series to figure out what the economic musical scene is here in Waco. So like, how would you describe it? How does music link in to the economics here in Waco?
So I think currently we're more local based with that.
Okay.
Like when we're looking at tourism coming in, heads and beds is the goal. So like the more people who are buying hotel rooms here, that's, you know, that's bringing in revenue to the city. They're spending money in our businesses and things like that. So that's positive economic impact. Right now, with our music and our music scene, even with like the larger venues, people are not coming from out of town to see those shows. Mm. Like it's primarily a local focus. So like if you think of Larry Joe Taylor Festival in Stephenville, people come from out of town and they stay in Stephenville to go to that festival. And it's a multi-day festival. Mm. You know, if there's, you know, like ACL in or South by Southwest, you know, in Austin, people are coming from out of town, getting hotel rooms and spending money in that city, staying for more than one day. I think Waco can get there eventually, but it's not going to be an overnight thing.
What would have to happen for that to happen?
We would need to have a venue to be able to support that, for one, and then parking to go along with it to support that, and then a hotel base to be able to support that. Like right now, our hotel occupancy is very, very high because we have so much tourism coming in from Magnolia and from everything we've got going on over there. So I think that that's one thing that we maybe in the future can look at. But I think, you know, it's not going to be something that happens tomorrow.
Yeah. Is there any person or any group of people that are trying to make that happen that you know of that are trying to, like, create those bigger venues to create maybe, like, a festival like that where it's all types of different genres, all types of – is there anything like that happening?
There have been talks just kind of in the planning stages of stuff about, you know, anytime there's money involved, everybody wants to spend it a different way. Mm. So it kind of just depends on the powers that be and which direction they decide to go. I mean, there are going to be new things coming to downtown. You know, I can't say everything that's coming right now, but there are going to be new things coming to downtown. There's going to be some new music venues coming to downtown. There's going to be a lot of cool stuff happening. It's not going to be an overnight thing. That's why I say if everybody can get on board the change train, and this is going to be a really cool ride if you can stick with it.
But would you say that being in Waco as a musician right now is like something that really people, like if people are considering moving out and maybe going to Austin, which is known for being a music city, would you recommend, hey, you know, Austin's cool and all, but there's going to be some really cool things happening here, so you might think about staying.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Very cool. Great to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.